Join the conversation. 203-333-9422. Back to Wake Up with Bill Finch. Live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning, everyone, and wake up on this dreary Sunday morning, although I love the dreariness. It's good for fishing. Arthur Lasky is my guest, former city attorney for the city of Bridgeport, and in private practice representing the downtrodden and the needy and the injured and the wronged and putting everything right in the justice system. Right, Arthur?
Absolutely. It's a full-time job.
We're also joined by our man in Washington. Good morning, Brett Brosder. How's it down in Washington this morning?
It's a beautiful morning. I think it's probably in the 40s, and glad to be here. And hey, Art, how are you?
How are you, Brett? Long time.
Yeah, same. And Mayor, thanks for having me on, as always.
You're welcome. Well, there's a lot of rather interesting and unusual things going on in your neck of the woods, Brett. So why don't we get right into some of the interesting things you might have heard. We have a legal expert here who may be able to handle some of the quandaries that we're facing with the new administration. What are you hearing down in Washington? We're talking about the justice system up here. How's the justice system down there?
I think that's a big question mark. I think we're all anticipating inauguration day coming up here. Obviously, it's going to continue to be quite the chaotic political environment. But, you know, that's always the case in beautiful Bridgeport. So glad we got the band back together here.
Well, yeah, there's discordant elements in government no matter where we look. And we try to, through efforts like the good lawyer Lasky and others, try to make things right for the people. And that's what we hope to do on this show, by talking about public affairs and issues that concern us. And one of the things, obviously, on people's minds, the other half of the country, a person running for president makes lots of promises. One of the promises he made was to be dictator on day one. I don't think anybody took him serious at that. But if he does do things like use the military to round up people on American soil, that would be a first, and would test the limits of our legal system. I posed this question off air to Arthur earlier. And I think the audience would be happy and interested in hearing his reflections about how vulnerable our system might just be. Arthur, what do you think about some of the things that are proposed, whether it be weaponizing the Department of Justice, sending FBI agents out of the headquarters, all kinds of things, using the military to round up citizens? What's the safeguard against that? We've never had this since the Civil War. What's the safeguard?
Well, the issue is always, you know, there's a check and balance system that's been set in place in our Constitution. If you have an activist Congress that oversees and has integrity to ask the right questions, whether it's a Republican president and a Republican Congress or otherwise, in Nixon's day, we had a Republican Congress rise up and say, yeah, there's a wrong that's being done here. So you've got a congressional oversight that hopefully has some teeth to it. And we'll see whether it's going to with this new Congress. But having control with both houses in the Republican corner, whether they're going to be patsies for the president.
And some would say the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, the Supreme Court is ultimately the arbiter between these things. And if that's been overly politicized.
The decider in chief.
It has, yeah. So, I mean, you've got that. You've got the institutional checks and balances that may be out of whack, which is obviously a concern if there's no oversight. But you've got governmental agencies that are designed to be independent. You know, the FBI head is not supposed to be a partisan position.
What if they are? What happens then?
Well, you know, those positions require integrity. And you've got to have somebody stand up and say, I won't do this, or I'm not going to do this, or don't even talk to me about doing this. You know, they're separate. As a lawyer, your duty is to your client. You know, the head of the FBI has a duty to the FBI and to do the job that the FBI is charged to do. You're not supposed to work for the president. You know, even the attorney general, while you work for the president, there are integrity issues about that. So your investigation should be independent.
So it comes down to individuals being strong enough with their commitment to the Constitution.
Yeah, ultimately, that's all you have.
Art, Brett, have you heard words coming out of the various appointees that would give you confidence that they would tell a president asking them to do wrong that they won't do it?
No. But the immigration issue.
You had to think about that.
The immigration issue here.
That wasn't the 7-second delay of the radio station here, folks. That was Brett being like, how the heck do I answer that question? Obviously, no. They're weirdos and nut jobs.
Well, I think
we just have to ask them to spell the word Constitution, see if they come close, you know.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they're winning any spelling. I don't think they're winning a spelling bee anytime soon here. But the H-1B visa issue is fascinating right now.
And okay, so just for the listeners,
immigration issue.
Hold on. The H-1B, those are the workers' visas, correct?
Correct. Correct. And Elon Musk, who is co-heading up the new Department of Government Efficiency, otherwise known as DOGE, is somebody who...
He hires a lot of those people, right?
And he is somebody who started working here with an H-1B visa. So,
well, let me stop you. I can stop you. Maybe it would have been good if we didn't let him in. We wouldn't have these problems. He could be in South Africa doing this. He wouldn't be in America.
Well, I guess an optimist would say that maybe that's helpful for the cause of protecting individual rights, but
yeah.
I wouldn't hold my breath there.
No.
But I know that immigration issues are something that are dealt with at the federal level so often, but I know both you and Art, myself to a lesser degree, have dealt with immigrations at the local level. And Mayor Art, I would love to hear if each of you have a couple of examples even of, or maybe the most potent example each of you have about times you dealt with immigration issues at the local level and were able to help people.
Well, Arthur, I don't know if you remember or not, but when the island of Haiti and Dominican Republic was hit by a terrible earthquake, we had hundreds and hundreds of Haitian nationals who were here visiting family living in Bridgeport that were stranded here. And their visas, these H-1B visas, were ready to expire. And we had to work with the Congress to not send them back home to literally piles of rubble. And there's still whole sections of Haiti that are just giant piles of concrete that were formerly homes. And we know that the turmoil there. Obviously, Statue of Liberty says, give me your huddled masses yearning to be free. I don't think we really ascribe to that anymore as much as we used to, but... there's still a vestige of that, right, in the law, in common law, and practice law?
Yeah, I mean, just this country was built on immigrants, you know, and everybody's got their story. My family came from Germany in the 1870s and 80s, 14, 15, 16-year-old people from nowhere who ended up here and built families, built churches, built communities, were successful. And so we've always had those doors open. There's always been, of course, an anti-immigrant bias.
Sure, the whole political party in the 1800s, when your family came here, the know-nothings.
Yeah, well, people didn't want the Irish, or they didn't want the Germans. Right. There's always somebody who doesn't want somebody.
And the interesting thing is the first people to be strung up by the KKK in New Orleans at their very beginning stages were Sicilians, not African-Americans.
Yeah, but there's always, and it's an easy target. Obviously, it's a them versus us. And nobody's been better at them versus us than the last 10 or 20 years of the far right demonizing people who come in. The fact is that our country needs laborers and our country needs entry-level workers.
And we need intellectual workers.
Sure.
So many of the students who come here to work at, you know, IBM right down the street in New York, and many of these people come from other countries.
Yeah. Right? For some people, the only legitimate visa is for a hot model from Czechoslovakia to get in, you know. And the fact is that we need more than just scientists from Sweden. You know, we need people from all over the world to come in and fill a lot of roles in our society that aren't being filled. And our labor markets are showing that. So the animus towards immigration in general is ultimately going to be bad for the economy. It's going to be bad for society. And it's a burden that we carry, unfortunately, because, you know, we haven't had an immigration bill since the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, we're going to bring this thing back to Main Street now. And of course, in every Main Street, there are sidewalks along those streets. We have a very interesting issue that sort of brings the whole, you know, political argument down to right down in front of your house, right? So Arthur Lasky, who's my guest, was a city attorney, and Truth in Advertising, both Brett and Art were in my administration working very hard to try to improve the city of Bridgeport, and did it for 8 years without any major controversies and without any indictments or people going to jail. It was a breath of fresh air for 8 years. We're so proud and honored to have had those 8 years to try to fix the city we love and help it and help the people there. So, Arthur, you've got it from both sides. You've seen how to defend the city, and when the city screws up, how to get them to stop screwing up. And recently, there's been a much publicized case, and I want to just give a quick summary, a sentence or two, where the city approached homeowners to fix their sidewalks because they wanted them fixed. There were defaults, perhaps, or whatever. But the whole crux of the matter came to the forefront when someone fell on a damaged sidewalk. Why don't you fill us in what happened from then and how it led to something much, much bigger where the city had dropped the ball?
Sure. So I represented a gentleman who was walking on a sidewalk. The sidewalk was defective. It was raised. He ended up tripping on it, fell, and injured his shoulder.
And which, by the way, it's something I do in the city of Bridgeport every day.
Sure.
I walk on a sidewalk.
Sure. And anybody who lives in the city of Bridgeport or who works or is in Bridgeport knows that the sidewalks are in
great
many places,
benefit.
Atrocious.
And but yet they can be a great public benefit,
sure,
when they work right.
Sure. I mean, you need to have the ability for people to move safely within a city. And every responsible municipality in the state of Connecticut and elsewhere has a program where they fix sidewalks, where they get rid of defects, where they are responsible.
And they go inspect.
Yes. Well, yeah. And just so everybody has a little bit of background, you know, roads and sidewalks are the responsibility of the municipality to repair. All right. And it has to do with an old concept of a right of way. So people oftentimes think that the city owns the first 6 feet of their property, and it doesn't really work that way. But, you know, there's a right of way between the front of your house and the front of the house across the street from you.
And does that mean that the city can use it for reasonable public purposes?
Sure. And those public purposes include a road for cars to drive on, and a
drainage,
grass strip, and a sidewalk.
And sewers and drainage,
right.
All that.
So the city can put all that.
We got to have it.
Yeah. And so what happens is, while the city has a right-of-way over that property, it has the duty to maintain it, which means when it comes to a sidewalk or a road or a pothole, you got to fix it. And it's the city's job legally to
fix
it.
Have they been doing that?
Well, that's what the law says they should do. The fact of the matter is, I've done a lot of work on these over the last 8 years. And, you know, there was a time where the City of Bridgeport Public Works Department was run by people who I happen to know were very responsive. And certainly it's a daunting task, but you have to try.
How many miles of sidewalks are there? I know there's 832 miles of road.
Yeah,
lane
so you
miles.
Double that roughly. I think it's 1,300 miles of sidewalks, or whatever the number
it's
is.
It's a long way. Yeah.
But in the old days when we used to defend these, we'd
from
come in and
Florida.
Say, look, we do the best we can as the public facilities. We know we have to fix it. When people call, we do the best we can, and we don't shirk from our responsibility. The law favors municipalities. I mean, to an extent beyond, if you fell in Walmart, you know, you got to show that something was there and it caused you to fall. It's not a big deal. Private property is different. For a city, to win against the city, you got to show that there was a defect, that the city knew about the defect before, that the city had time to fix that defect that they knew of. And despite having knowledge of it and time to fix it, they still refused and failed to fix it. It's a hard burden. And on top of that, you got to prove that you were 100% without fault. If you're
so only a good lawyer like you could win this case.
Well,
Arthur, how did you win?
Because part of it is because the people who run the Department of
First off, you got a settlement for this guy who was injured.
No, we had a jury verdict, and it was $114,000.
So he got money to put his life back before he was damaged.
Yeah, to pay his medical
repaired.
Bills. And,
yeah.
So, but the issue here is that they're hard cases to win except against the city of Bridgeport. And the reason is because
the city of Bridgeport is an easy target?
No, it's not that they're an easy target, but they make themselves an easy target. In my case, because under the law, while I would normally have to prove the existence of a defect and a failure to remedy it and knowledge beforehand, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of miles of sidewalk, the city admitted all those things in the case against me.
And how do they admit it? You have to depose them? They come
Well,
in.
I deposed everybody.
You ask tough questions? And
yeah. And
how did they screw up their answers?
Because since 2016, the highly paid individuals who run the Department of Public Facilities, the director, the deputy director, the person in charge of sidewalks, and the new director of public facilities, all of whom make, you know, $120,000, $30,000, $40,000,
$50,000. Certainly more than most of us in Bridgeport.
Sure. They were asked the question, does the
they
city...
They have important jobs.
Well, they're important jobs, but they have to do them. Right. So what happens is I ask them, do you have an obligation to fix sidewalks and inspect them in the city of Bridgeport? And the director, the deputy director, the person in charge of sidewalks, and the new director, to this day, running the department, said, we don't inspect because we don't have a duty to fix. And we don't fix because we don't have the money.
So these people being paid a lot of money made your case for you.
Well, yeah. The issue is really they couldn't be put on the stand, because if they were put on the stand, they would come out and say, essentially, we don't do our jobs. We don't understand our jobs. And rather than put them on the stand, the city admitted the defect, the prior notice, and the obligation to fix that they failed to adhere to. And the only thing I had to prove was that my client was not at fault, which I was able
sure.
to prove.
So, you know, as a former mayor, I can sort of understand the situation of wanting to fix things that are more overwhelming than you have money to pay for. But what you're really saying is you just have to try. And the law will protect the city who's showing effort to try to train their personnel to learn the law, to learn their responsibilities, and to then make an effort. And if they had made the effort and trained the individuals to understand the law and their obligations under the law, then there would have been a different outcome for this case. But what you're saying is really deeper than just not fixing the sidewalks.
Yeah, well, two things. One is they're not doing their job. I mean, that's obvious and clear. They don't understand their legal obligations, first. And secondly, the fact that they don't do their job means that people get hurt. And the sidewalk in front of your house looks crummy.
And by the way, you know, people always say, oh, the guy got paid $100,000, whatever. You know, he didn't want to be injured in the first place. Yeah. What trial lawyers do, and I'm familiar with the field pretty well, since the city of Bridgeport gets sued every day by 10 o'clock, whether we like it or not, as soon as the courts open up, there's a lawsuit filed. But you don't want people to have a claim to sue you, because that means they've been injured, and now you have to try to put lives that are damaged back together again. That's what the law is supposed to do for people. I give a great deal of credit to trial lawyers. You know, everybody says, you know, the limit on the awards and these guys are ambulance chasers and all that. No, they're actually the front bulwark against the excesses of government power, against the excesses of corporate power, for the individual who's been wronged to try to put their life back together again. And as you said, it was a jury of fellow citizens who said this never should have happened in the first place.
Yeah.
And so how do we make it so? What happens next? Does the Attorney General of Connecticut get involved? Can people, after the break, we're going to really want to talk about if you've had a sidewalk replaced in Bridgeport and paid for it, which obviously you're going to have me some comments on that. I think maybe right now is a good time for a break. We'll catch the news at the bottom of the hour. We'll have some advertising, and then we'll come back to hear about if you have spent a lot of money to replace your sidewalk in Bridgeport, there may be a remedy. Listen to it, and we'll be right after these messages.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up. I hope you're having a pleasant Sunday waking up. There's certainly some bracing matters that we talk about to get your day going here every Sunday. I want to thank Connoisseur Media and WICC Radio at 600 AM and 95.9 FM for allowing this signal to go out and for people to be able to hear about issues of importance to them. And if you just look out, if you're living in Bridgeport or Stratford or Trumbull and some places in Trumbull, you look out your front door, you see a street and you see a sidewalk. Now, in Bridgeport, they've had a scheme lately to get homeowners to cough up money to replace their sidewalk. And as we've heard earlier in this segment from Arthur Lasky, former city attorney, now a private attorney, who has just brought an action against the city for a client who was injured on a damaged sidewalk. It's sort of a complicated situation, but it simply put means the city's responsible for the sidewalk and the road, the right of way, an ancient legal element of law that we've had forever, so that the common interests can proceed. The people could walk, they could have their electricity and come to their home, and their sewage go from their home, and the roads travel over the road. So it's for public purpose, but it has to be maintained by the government, by the city. And now they have a scheme to replace it. Arthur, why don't you fill us in on what the scheme entails and whether that scheme is legal and what citizens we'll talk about that afterwards, what citizens could do if they feel they've been wronged by the city. Why don't you fill us in?
Sure. So as we said before, the city has the duty to maintain the right of way. That means a length of distance, usually it's curb to curb and then extra distance on both sides. And for the most part in residential areas, it covers the sidewalks, the grassy strip, the road and the sidewalk on the other side of the street as well. The city's got a duty to maintain that. What's that mean? Fix cracks, fill holes. Whether
respond
it's
to citizen complaints about
sure, but
damages.
That's a legal duty, all right? The only exception to that legal duty...
It's in the state law.
Yes. And the only exception to that legal duty is the state-empowered municipalities...
They gave them some wiggle room.
Well, they transfer some responsibility for the removal of snow and ice on a sidewalk within a public right-of-way on the homeowner who adjoins the sidewalk.
So when you're listening to Paul Peorick here on WICC and he says it's going to snow, get the shovel out because you're responsible.
Yeah, you've got to clear the snow from your sidewalk.
And I always do.
Yeah, and that's
most
that's,
of the time.
But
once
that's
in a while.
That's a compromise that was statutorily enacted to allow municipalities to transfer that responsibility if they choose to the homeowners. Bridgeport does that. So when it snows, you got to clean the snow and the ice from your sidewalk. That's fine. But there is no transfer of legal responsibility to repair sidewalks from the municipality to the homeowner. That does not exist. So if a person falls on your sidewalk and it's within the city right-of-way and they sue you, as the homeowner, you can file an act, you can file a defense and say, it's not our sidewalk. We don't have a responsibility.
And you won't pay for something due to the damaged sidewalk. But if you had it icy and didn't try to take the ice off, you might have liability then.
Correct. So
that you would probably share with the city because...
Well, yeah, it's the homeowner's primary duty to remove the ice and snow. But when it comes to a repair, that's the city's job, all right?
Now, you've walked a lot of these sidewalks in Bridgeport for your case to witness firsthand. Can you tell us what you've experienced in terms of the condition?
Well, they're atrocious in a lot of places. I mean, people describe sidewalks, you know, you just live here or walk around downtown. My office is in Fairfield. You know, they came and shaved every uneven surface within the entire downtown area and in neighborhoods with a shaver, and they level the uneven
so
areas
So your foot
off.
Doesn't catch and you don't trip.
Right.
Simple.
But every responsible municipality does something like
we
that.
We want smooth roads. We want smooth sidewalks.
Right. And you can't be perfect, but you got to try. And as we talked about before, the people who run DPW don't try.
So you've established their negligence. So in response for that, perhaps, the city now has a plan. And tell us how that plan works.
Well, what happened is back in, I think, 2016, they instituted a plan. And what they said was they'll send you a letter and they'll say, gee, your sidewalk in front of your house is defective. It's got a bumper. It's got a hole.
So they've given the homeowner notice of their own problem.
Right. And they'll say to the homeowner, you got to fix it. And if you don't fix it, we're going to fix it. And charge you, all right?
So we're trying to educate the citizenry now that right. It is not their responsibility legally. Yeah. It is the city's.
It is. And so the city will send you a letter and say, uh-oh, your sidewalk's broken. You got to fix it. And you have 30 days to do it and contact us. Now, if you follow through and you call the city, they will put you in touch with their one contractor who's contracted with the city. And he'll come out and they'll say
to
you.
Why is there only one?
That you'll have to ask the people who run the city.
Shouldn't there be like bidding and get a lower price for bidding and things like that?
Yeah, when this institute...
I know that's the way we tried to do it.
Well, when this program was first instituted back in 2016 and 17, some people on the council were very critical of it, and they said, look...
Was that Ernie Newton?
I don't know who it was, but there's some newspaper accounts of it back
then. Ernie always has something interesting to say.
But people raised the
issue... If you're listening, Ernie, wake up.
Yeah.
This is wake up.
People raised the issue and said, look, the contractor came in and bid $4,500 to do the sidewalk, but I can get another person to come in and do it for two. And they would say, well, you got to use the city contractor, right? But here's the kicker. The city would say, if you decide, you know, to participate in this program, the city will pay 50% of the cost. What a great deal, right? So if it's $5,000, you pay $2,500 out of your pocket, the city will supposedly throw $2,500 towards the project, and we'll come and fix your sidewalk. In my view, there's no legal basis for the city to charge a homeowner to fix a sidewalk within the city right-of-way in front of their property. And they've been doing it for a long time, and they've allocated money.
Are they still doing it?
I believe they are.
And so what did you do about that? Did you ask somebody to look into this matter?
Well, we raised the issue, and it was raised in an article in the Connecticut Post after my verdict. And the city attorney was quoted as saying, oh, we're going to send a request to the Attorney General's Office of Connecticut to find out whether the program we've had for the last 8 years is legal.
Could you send it to them?
Anybody could. Yeah.
Well, maybe you should send it to them, because I would imagine the city of Bridgeport's not going to want to cause their own firestorm, right?
Yeah, and to the extent that it...
Not to put you on the spot.
No, right? But it purportedly... Listen, the city attorney said in the paper that they've asked an inquiry of the Attorney General's Office to find out if this program is legal. Now, I don't think it takes... the Attorney General to tell the city that there's no legal basis to charge homeowners to repair sidewalks that the city has a legal obligation to repair. But that's the quoted response from the city attorney's office. What I would tell people, if you've paid over the last 8 years,
this could be a lot of money, right? I mean, it could be $10,000 for a $20,000 job, or $7,000 for a $14,000 job, or
people. I don't know what people have paid, but I know they pay thousands of dollars. And these are homeowners in Bridgeport who already pay very high taxes.
Yeah,
and now they're being charged $10,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is, $1,000 to fix a sidewalk in front of their house because the city told them you're going to have responsibility to do it. You're going to have legal liability to do it, which is probably not true. And so what I would tell people is, listen, I don't know what the attorney generals will say, but the city attorney should say, if the attorney general doesn't, that it's not a proper program. It's not a proper transfer of responsibility, financial or otherwise, on the homeowner. And they should call the mayor's office and they should say, you know what, I had my sidewalk repaired under your 50-50 program, and if in fact it's not legal, I want my money back.
They're going to need a good lawyer to get their money back out of the city of Bridgeport. We already told our listeners that they're protected so much by state law, but it sounds like an open and shut case, but like so many other things, it may not be. And I know you're a bit of a crusader, Arthur. That's one of the things we all love about you as a lawyer. And you've taken on some pretty tough cases. I remember reading about a case that you're involved with where corrections officers actually killed a person under the custody of the state of Connecticut, and other physical injuries that were created by wayward correction officers. But now you're investigating this, and you think that it's a lot bigger problem, and there's more people involved potentially with covering this up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your case? You seem to take cases that are one person and their injuries, but then it expands to social change. So let's talk about how this case might be like your sidewalk case and open up a can of worms.
Well, you know, it's a lot of people in Bridgeport know people, or they've experienced a situation where they were incarcerated. Being in jail is not a pleasant experience, particularly
you and I are lucky to have found out that Not find that out firsthand.
No, but yeah, thank God. But listen, I've been to prisons, and I've dealt with people who've been in prison. It's not
for those who
haven't.
It really is, to take a moment and just mention, it is one of the most dehumanizing places you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
There is nothing soft about being in jail. It's steel. It's concrete. It's the smell of urine. It's the smell of chlorine. It's the smell and the sounds of people being caged, and it's pretty gruesome for anybody who hasn't been there.
Yeah, when you go into a prison to meet a client or to take a deposition or whatever it is,
just don't break the law, everybody. Okay?
Yeah. Well, but when they slam those doors behind you, and you walk through a series of them, and then you've got to sit down for a period of time, and then get out. You know, when you hear those doors clank behind you when you're on your way out, it's a lot more comforting than it is when you're going in.
So we have about 10 more minutes. Tell us about the case that opened up a can of worms, and tell us where it stands and what you hope the state of Connecticut could do to make it a more just system.
Sure. I represented the family of a gentleman who was 30 years old who was put into New Haven Correctional. He was there for about 36 hours for a violation of probation, which is really a nothing charge. He had mental illness like a lot of people in the prison system do. He had a breakdown. He wasn't getting medicated. Guards were called. So rather than be concerned about a mental health situation, it became a correctional action to deal with an unruly inmate.
Using force.
Well, using a lot of force. An illegal kick to the head, 4 sprays of pepper spray, dragging him into a cell, jumping on him, putting him into 5-point restraints, which is essentially hog-tying and handcuffing, having 6 correctional guards.
What's the fifth point?
Well, they
the four called, limbs.
Well, the four limbs and around the waist is
okay.
The fifth. And then the guards were on top of him. Now, this is a gentleman who was obese, who had breathing issues, who had asthma, who'd been sprayed 4 times, was not remediated on the pepper spray. And then he was left in the cell on his back. The door was closed, and he's supposed to be checked every 15 minutes, and he wasn't. He was given no medical attention despite all of the regulations requiring it. And, you know, my expert has indicated he was probably dead within 4 to 5 minutes. He wasn't discovered for an hour and a half, even though guards supposedly check on him every 15 minutes. One of the things that system-wide we've learned in this case is there were at least 4 documents that were forged.
Forged. Connecticut forged. Department of Correction documents were forged. How were they forged?
Well, the individuals whose names were on them and their signatures or initials were indicated.
Like an incident report.
Well, one was a time check. So every 15 minutes, he's supposed to be checked. The four guards who did the time check said, those aren't my signatures. That's not my name. And the, it doesn't correlate with the videotape on when somebody went through. So that was forged. And those were documents that were directly related to his
now,
death.
Are those corrections officers in legal trouble? Will they go to jail for lying or cheating?
Nobody went to jail. One guard resigned, and he was given a – he pled ultimately for just a misdemeanor of an assault third. But it left his job after that day. Nobody else, none of the other individuals were punished in any way. And here's what I would tell people if you want to make change in Connecticut. For people who are incarcerated, who are subjected to unreasonable force, unless you hire a lawyer and spend years and years and lots of money, it's very difficult to get to the truth because the DOC doesn't produce videos, which exist voluntarily, of what happened, number one. Number two, as
you would think if they did everything by the book, the videos would vindicate them.
You would think so, but the videos in our case were so condemning.
So if there's legislators listening to this, what could they do to change the law so that these videos are given to family members, especially in the case of fatality? I don't understand how the state feels that they can extinguish a life and then have no repercussions for it. That doesn't seem to be civilized.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, there's an ombudsman position, which was defunded maybe a dozen years ago. There were moves to put a new ombudsman in. So somebody would be in charge of investigating the DOC internally to make sure that procedures were followed in the event that someone was injured or killed. That position has been unfilled and is on a temporary basis right now. So they've got to get
Let me ask our other guest still holding, Brett Brosner.
Yeah.
Brett, are you aware of the gentleman, the attorney from Hartford that's involved in this?
I am. Devon Ward, an incredibly talented guy. I worked with him in Hartford for Mayor Luke Bronin. And he is a dear friend. He's also been a personal lawyer to my wife and I at times, and very talented guy, and I hope he ends up becoming the permanent. He's currently acting and hopefully becomes permanent this legislative session.
I didn't realize the circle here has been connected, but I happened to sit next to him at a birthday party recently, and I was interested from Arthur's perspective that this guy was the guy who's going to be able to potentially clean this up. Do you think Devon is the kind of guy that has the – we talked earlier in the show about Trump appointees who wouldn't stand up to Trump if they thought he was wrong. Is this the kind of guy that would stand up to the corrections department if he thought he was right?
Yes, 100%.
Well, that's good news to our listeners, right, because we've got this terrible story about a client of Arthur's who was killed by – members of the staff of the state of Connecticut, Department of Corrections. So the blood is on all our hands when something like that happens. And certainly missing your parole meeting is not a capital offense. We're happy that we live in a system of jurisprudence and the rule of law where missing your parole is not a capital offense. But in this case, it became a capital offense because of the poor behavior of people who work for us. Sad story. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back after a few messages.
Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Speak your mind. 203-333-9422.
Welcome back to Wake Up on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Thanks for tuning in. The show's called Wake Up because on Sunday mornings we want to start the week by waking up to the issues that are around us and how to fix them. And we talked today with Attorney Arthur Lasky about fixing Bridgeport sidewalks where many people slip and fall and injured, and fixing our Department of Corrections where he tells me off air that quite a few people have died under the care or lack thereof of the Department of Corrections. Arthur, do you want to elaborate a little bit more? We have a few minutes, and we want to leave the listeners with some things we can do to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, the numbers would be shocking, I think, to people. And I know Representative Ann Hughes has done a lot of work on this. And there was a recent study of individuals who were put into the Department of Corrections system who ended up dying. And I don't remember the exact number.
There is a lag, too, for somebody you mentioned on medication. this guy didn't get his medication. I know for other people that have been incarcerated, it takes a while for the Department of Corrections or even people put into mental health facilities for the medication prescriptions to catch up. And that lag can often lead to mental breakdowns.
Yeah, it does. And that's what happens. And unfortunately,
you know, with everything being on a computer, you wonder, like, well, just go to my chart, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not that easy. Well, it could be much easier than it is. The problem in the system is that so many people in our criminal justice system in the Department of Corrections have mental illness, and the numbers are astonishingly high.
Yeah,
and the
system, what we do with our mentally ill. Right. We don't have asylums anymore. Right. We put them in jail.
Right, and many people have either drug addiction issues or mental health or both.
Yeah,
and they end up, you know, going in for a series of small petty crimes, and they get stuck in there for 4 months or 6 months or whatever it is. The DOC
all the
system,
time making their problems worse.
Sure, it is
not better.
And they don't. The DOC system is not designed for mental health counseling, or not designed for drug addiction and withdrawal issues. And people who overreact or don't react appropriately are considered to be security risks or discipline issues, and they end up getting put into solitary confinement, which makes...
And you got to wonder about the system, right? We hear also on the other side all these well-meaning Department of Correction officers getting terribly injured and brutalized by the brutality of the environment.
Yeah.
So... I don't want to leave listeners with the opinion that all people working for DOC, there's good people. There's actually people who probably have blown the whistle on bad behavior, correct?
Yeah, there are. Listen, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very good people who do it. But I can tell you from what I've learned in the case that I just prosecuted is that very good people sat by and watched very bad things happen. A few of them spoke up when questioned, but for the most part, very few people jumped in and stopped it.
Well, you did, and that's why we had you on the air today, Arthur. We're going to have to go, but hopefully we'll be able to address this issue more fully in the future. Maybe you and Ann Hughes could come in and do a show together about what legislators can do to make sure this doesn't happen again, and that people, even the ones we don't really like and we need them to be in jail, are still treated like human beings. That's the way society has always operated, at least in modern history, and we hope to continue that. Thank you, Arthur Lasky.
Thank you very much.
Attorney in Fairfield and former city attorney from Bridgeport. And thank you, Rick, in the studio for helping me get through another hour of Wake Up with myself, Bill Finch, on 600 AM and 95.9 FM. See you next week, everybody.